You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
James Joyce's Dubliners, a collection of short stories once considered too scandalous and sacrilegious to be publishable, celebrates its 100th year in print this month. To mark that anniversary, WNYC's Jerome L. Greenspace is presenting audio plays inspired by four of the stories, Araby, Eveline, Clay, and the Dead. Dubliners, a quartet, will be presented in a two-night run at the Greenspace this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. They were adapted by award-winning playwright Arthur Yorinks, who joins us now, along with music director Edward Barnes and actress Aideen Maloney. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Arthur, of the 15 stories in Dubliners, did you find these four the most suitable to adapt into play form?
Well, quite honestly, some of them are probably the most challenging to adapt. But I chose these four because I felt that they were in some way connective to each other. And I wanted to create a kind of suite that they all would relate to each other in some way. So these four in particular seem to connect.
Because music is a theme in all four of them?
Music is a theme in all four of them. Music brings one out of the other and into the other. And the idea of, first of all, I wanted to pick one from each category that Joyce himself declared: childhood, adolescence, maturity, and then the Dead, of course, stands alone by itself. So it almost felt like you were following a particular character, even though it's not literally true in the stories. But you know, the person in Eveline could be Maria in Clay, and could, you know, it kind of follows a trajectory, so it works.
Edward, how did you choose the music for these plays?
Well, I have to give Arthur credit for that. The script named the actual tunes and the songs that we'll be doing.
Are they all pieces that come out of traditional or popular Irish songs?
Some are out of popular Irish songs. Some are by an Irish composer named Thomas Moore. And some were popular Victorian operettas.
And did Joyce name them all in the stories?
He named some of them that we're using, of course. And then I, with a little research, for example, at the end of Araby, we have a version of I'll Sing These Songs of Araby, and some think that he named that story after that song. So there's connectiveness to it all.
Aideen, aren't you and your father, Paddy Maloney, working on a musical collaboration inspired by a part of Joyce's Ulysses?
You guys have done your research. Yes, we are. My signature piece is Molly Bloom from the Penelope chapter. I first read Ulysses when I was 10 years of age. And it was the
you got through it all?
I got through it easier than as an adult. I think children are more open. There's less stigma about, oh, this is complicated writing. You just read it. And, of course, I was looking for the dirty bits, as most, you know, pre-adolescent children. I know. I didn't understand half of them. But I liked the musicality of it. To get back to, you know, what Arthur is doing here, I think music is very much a part of Joyce's work, all his work. And for me, in particular, I have focused on the Penelope chapter, and I've broken it down into movements, not unlike what Arthur is doing with Dubliners. And so we've recorded it, and my father has composed and is, musical director on it. And we're focusing more on what's personal to me, which is the Moroccan influence, the Spanish influence, the Mother Earth influence of who Molly Bloom is.
It is interesting that your father is one of the co-founders of the band The Chieftains. And The Chieftains were named after another work of literature by another writer altogether, but would suggest that there's often a link between literature and music in Irish traditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, Ireland has a history of, no matter who you were, where you're from, what background, how much money you've had forever, we've been a nation of storytellers, and we come together to communicate by telling stories. And these stories are through music you know, all of the arts are connected for us, historically speaking. So,
did you grow up in Dublin?
I did, yeah.
It has to be a very different Dublin than the one that Joyce writes about.
Well, when I was young, it wasn't. It was closer. That's a long time ago. But, you know, the Dublin that I grew up in, I sometimes compare it to what America, Middle America, would have been in just after the war, World War II, you know. So we were a little behind the eight ball, and thankfully. And I was very fortunate. I grew up in a background surrounded by artists from all over the world, from the, you know, writers and poets and musicians and painters and rock stars and the whole lot. And so I was, you know, I grew up in a family where we were very open to reading, to listening, to seeing.
Now, Arthur, these are not musicals.
No.
But what does music express to the audience that a narrator or the characters can't?
Music expresses in some way the mystery in the stories. You know, there is, each of these stories ends with a certain mysterious quality to it. The narratives end in a way that leave you in thought, and the one clear, wonderful way of doing that is to end each of the movements or parts with a piece of music, so the audience can digest it all.
Edward, what do you think performing the music from the book adds to these plays? When we're reading these stories, we have to supply the songs in our heads if we know them.
Well, there's that for sure. The audio hearing, actually hearing the music that's referred to in the book, the atmosphere that's with it, the flavor that's with it, the words that go with it, really, I think, add not only a texture but a whole secondary level to the whole thing.
A-team, would you have known most of these songs?
I would, yeah. I know them all. That's not to, you know, to say I can't sing them, but I certainly grew up with them, and they're in my you know, very being. Some of them, you know, were not the style of music that I would, you know, my father performed, but a lot of the melodies that were involved in the ballads and the operatic, you know, a lot of them, you can hear hints of old, ancient, traditional Irish tunes. Obviously, you know, musicians of that time, just as they are today, are influenced by what came before. So it's all very familiar to me.
Why was it so difficult to get these stories published at the time?
Oh, as a writer, I can relate. Well, at the time, it was an interesting thing in publishing in Ireland, and I'm not sure if it was this way in England, but not only was the publisher, quote, liable, but the printer, the literal printer, could be sued. So at one point, there were terrific letters between Joyce and his publisher for 10 years talking about Dubliners, and the publisher is telling Joyce, well, the printer refuses to, he thought that some of it was scandalous, some of it was, which was, now we'd look at it and think, what could they possibly be talking about? But in those days, any little tidbit, and the printer refused to print.
Did you read these stories in school, Aideen?
Not so much in school, no. You know, you mean in elementary and secondary school?
They teach it in what we would call high school here?
Not too much, no. I did it independently. We had no television for most of my childhood, so I got...
Even though your father was rich and famous?
He wasn't rich. He might have been famous, but he's still famous but not rich. This poor man is still out working. Mm-hmm. So we grew up in a very humble background, and but the one thing that we had access to, which traditionally speaking in Ireland, no matter, again, what economic background you come from, is the ability to read. And to gain knowledge and to have an opinion.
Do people read Dubliners today? Because Joyce now, after all of that's the rejection, him going into exile when he was younger, now is considered the greatest Irish writer.
Isn't that the same of, you know, Michelangelo and previous, you know, great artists, they're not appreciated as well as they could be within their lifetime. And I think sometimes, for whatever reason, it takes time.
I think Michelangelo was appreciated a lot more, especially by the church, than James Joyce was.
Especially by the church, yeah. You know, Joyce was a singer.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. So is that why he included references to music in so much
really
of his writing?
I really do think so. He actually...
But there's also a musicality to the writing. Finnegan's Wake looks like it's meant to be sung.
I cannot believe that wasn't an enormous, if not the core, influence on his writing. He was I think he appreciated music. I think he actually won an award for singing, if I'm not mistaken. And in a way, the conceit with what we're doing with Dubliners is the interstitial songs. It's as if Joyce is in the room commenting on what's happening.
Edward Joyce referred to the realizations, both great and small, that his characters in Dubliners experience as epiphanies. What role does music play in those moments?
Well, I think one character sitting in the room, Aideen, has a song that she has to sing as the character Maria in one of the short stories.
Aideen, you're afraid we're going to ask you to sing
it now?
She's
giggling.
Waving your hand.
No.
The very singing of it is a kind of epiphany for that character. I think by hearing them sing and try to reach for this music that Joyce wanted, you hear where they're coming from in a way you couldn't hear spoken.
Arthur, was this a fairly straightforward process of adapting and dramatizing these stories? Because I'm thinking of one of them. Araby runs 5 pages. The play runs 50 minutes.
This was an enormous challenge. I mean, first of all, you're approaching sort of the Bible of literature. I mean, far be it from me, a short guy from Brooklyn, to take on James Joyce.
I can improve James Joyce.
That's right, exactly. But you know, when I get involved in all of these projects, I have a strange, unique, chameleon-like ability to get somehow within what he was doing and what he was trying to do. And it is an arcane skill I've developed, but adapting literature into audio plays is a particular ability, and it involves being faithful and not being afraid to insert yourself in it.
How different from making it into a film, as John Huston did with The Dead?
Beautiful film.
He had a longer time.
He had a longer time and a bigger budget, and I think.
For the same story giving how many minutes?
Right, yeah. Well, an hour. His film isn't that much longer. His film is a gem, an absolute gem. And quite honestly, I think we're doing something similar. I mean, we can't fit that many characters into the green space as Huston had in the film, and it's a party scene, but we fill it with terrific, talented actors who portray this setting. Who else is in the cast?
Yes.
Peter Garrity, Terry Donnelly, Dana Ivey. I'm afraid I'm going to forget people, so I'm afraid to make this list.
That's pretty impressive. Yeah, and, of course, Aidan Maloney.
And Aidan Maloney.
I understand that both performances are sold out, but people can watch a live webcast of them on the Green Spaces website.
That's right. That's right.
And how do they access that?
I believe they go to the site, WNYC, and thegreenspace.org, and they'll be able to find it there.
My great thanks to Arthur Urinx, who is the playwright and director of this suite, Dubliners a Quartet, to Aideen Maloney, who is one of the actors, and to Edward Barnes, who is a music director, arranger, and pianist. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.